Hey, this is Sally and Shane, and we wanted to just drop a quick note here before the episode to let you know that we recorded this episode a while ago before the uprisings across the country to protest police violence and systemic anti-blackness and demanding justice for George Floyd and the many black people who have been murdered with impunity.
Black Lives Matter. We stand with protesters across the country demanding justice and an end to state and other violence against black people.
We also want to encourage any white people listening to educate themselves about anti-blackness and police violence and to take action in support of black lives. If you're wondering how to get started, we'll share some links on our show notes.
You can also donate what you can afford to an organization doing work in defense of black lives, like Movement for Black Lives, or to a bail fund, or directly to the families of George Floyd or Breonna Taylor or other victims of violence. This is the first step we can take to support black lives. Okay, back to the show.
You're listening to Co-op Mood, a casually serious conversation about playing video games.
This is episode 4, Jones in the Fast Lane.
Okay, let's do this. I'm Sally. You can find me on Twitter at SallyT.
And I'm Shane. You can find me on Twitter at Mundangerous.
So Shane, we like to start each episode with a story from the world of video games that we find intriguing or funny or weird.
Uh-huh.
This is a really fun one. Would you introduce it? Since, as we've established, I do not possess the vocabulary to talk about it in any meaningful way.
Yeah, so I have managed to cheat my way into getting sports on here because the Madden Bowl was won recently, which is like the competition, like the biggest tournament competition for like Madden football, right? Run by EA. And it was won recently with a team that did not use a quarterback or throw a single pass in its entire tournament run. They just ran zone read the entire time.
They just did what?
They did zone read, which is a type of play in football, which is like, you know, not even that deep in football, but, you know, like it's a basic play in Madden, right? It's a type of play in Madden. But notably, it's missing a key player called the quarterback.
Now, even I know what a quarterback is and does. And my understanding is that they're responsible for making sure the ball gets into the hands of somebody who can score.
Yeah, usually that's either handing it off to a running back or throwing the ball to somebody downfield who can, you know, like run, catch, you know, take the ball to the end zone. This guy did it without having any threat. He played a punter whose skill set is kicking the ball. He played a punter instead of a quarterback and just handed the ball off to a running back the entire time. So they just ran the ball. It's like playing rugby.
So my question is, do you in the binary of admire the moxie and on the admire the moxie, this is cheating binary, where do you fall?
Okay. So as a kid, my dad stopped playing football video games with me because I never punted on fourth down, which is like traditionally what you do in real football.
Okay.
You know, if you get to fourth down and you haven't converted, then you punt. I would just go for it because the odds of me making it in a video game were very high against my dad. And he quit playing with me after that because I didn't respect the game. So I got to say, I respect this move.
Nice. Yeah, I think we can be pretty sure that your dad would fall on the this is cheating end of the old binary.
Absolutely. This is a disgrace to football and football simulation, to which I would argue Madden's not a great simulation. It's just a video game.
Fair enough. Yeah. I think it's so cool when people find ways to do unintended, ridiculous things that kind of change the experience of the game. So I think it's totally rad. And the article that we'll put it in the show notes, but it's from Kotaku. And it explains that I've never played Madden, so I don't fully understand how this works. Maybe you can explain, but basically that the dude basically, instead of like investing whatever resources you need to invest in like a really good quarterback, he just put it into really good tons of other players.
Yeah. So I think the way that Madden tournaments work is you draft your team from like all the players available, and they all cost you a certain amount of money as well. So you have a salary cap and a draft. And basically by not taking a quarterback, he saved himself like 40% of his draft cap, which let him get better players at other positions. So he just got a great offensive line, a great running back, and like cheap blocking wide receivers to block for him. His offense was set, and then he got good defensive players and won on defense.
I love that.
So it's like a Moneyball type thing, you know, where it's like you identify the underpriced assets and you go make your strategy work for that. And also it turns out that Madden has a bug in its zone read logic and defenses are bad at defending it. So go just run the thing that works.
That's amazing. Yeah, I definitely, my ruling is admire the moxie. And it makes me think that we should also do an episode where we talk about the coolest ways that people game their games without breaking them. Because there's you can exploit bugs in certain ways. I was just reading this week about like certain bugs in Animal Crossing where you can like do some complicated things and duplicate a zillion, which is like different, I think, than basically using systems in the game in unintended ways. And there's just a lot of cool stories of people doing that.
Yeah, I mean, this is fitting because people were doing that a lot in Stardew Valley as well, which we'll talk about later, of like there were like little tricks and optimizations that could save you time in certain ways and things like that. Like fishing, you could fish without the time passing, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
And like, so you could do more in a day, right? Which is a cheat in that it's not the intended behavior. But is it a cheat if you're allowed to, you know, if the game lets you do it, it's their problem for not patching it, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's actually, that reminds me of time traveling in Animal Crossing, which we'll get to in a bit. So let's put a pin in that. So let's talk about what we're playing right now. Do you want to start, Shane?
Yeah, I have gone back to Disco Elysium, which because of the strangeness of how we recorded and got COVIDed and things like that, I don't know that we've really talked about on Co-op Mode yet. It is one of my favorite role-playing games ever, and I'm not done with it. but I have died from failing to turn off a ceiling fan. I have died from making a phone call and punching a payphone. I am very excited to find out what stupid way my idiot character dies next. But it's just a really good, heartfelt, like introspective, like beautifully written and scripted RPG. So I'm really enjoying all the options we get there.
That's awesome. I'm so psyched that you're into it. I love that game and I played it twice in a row. I started a third playthrough and then I got distracted by other things, but I definitely see myself playing it a bunch more. It's just like kind of constantly surprising. And when I was Googling around last time we talked about this, and I found someone somehow created some sort of bot or I don't know, script or something to pull every single line of dialogue from the game and just like put it onto a page.
Oh.
And I was going through it and realizing that even though I played the game straight through twice, I haven't seen a ton. There's a ton of dialogue I've never seen, which
interesting.
Yeah, which makes me really excited to play more and also just like is a reminder that it's a really fucking deep game.
Speaking of really deep games.
Speaking of really deep games, I went from having never played Animal Crossing in my entire life to doing nothing in my life but playing Animal Crossing.
Uh-huh.
This is Animal Crossing.
This has befallen two gaming women in my life now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Who else is playing?
One of the women in our RPG group also got her Switch now, so
she's no
longer playing Overwatch with us.
Yeah, it's over. I mean, I'm no longer. It's like it started with me being like, you know, I haven't touched my PlayStation or a game on my PC in a while, and then it's like I'm not really picking up a book anymore. It's slowly going to be like haven't talked to my wife in days. but yeah, it's really fun. It's really cute. As a bazillion people have noted, I think accurately, it's a really nice thing to be able to play during a time when so many of us are sheltering in place, just because not just of like the actual like gameplay loop and what you do in the game and the fact that it's adorable, but also that, you know, you can visit other people on their islands and people can visit you and you can interact with them and interact with the things on their island. And it's just like a very nice thing for right now. I wish I meant to actually check my Switch before we recorded to see how much I've played. I started 2 weeks ago and I would guess that I've put like, my guess is like 60 hours.
That's a lot. That's a
job. It's a lot. It's a job. And it's really fun and delightful. And we'll talk about it more in a little bit, but I don't see myself stopping playing it anytime soon. There's a lot of times when I spend a lot of time with one game, I'll have moments during that, like the course of that gameplay, where I'm like, oh, I'm going to go play my PlayStation. And then I think about what I'm playing and I'm like, I don't really feel like playing that game right now. I have not had that experience with Animal Crossing yet. Mm-hmm. Maybe when I get to the 260th hour, I will. I don't know.
Well, I believe that's just the start of the game.
Yeah, I know. I think it is. Yeah, I think like I was reading some stuff online and I can sort of tell from what people are saying that I'm so in the very beginning of the game, even though I put in what feels like a huge amount of time. So who knows? Okay, so that actually is a good segue to move into our main topic, which we're kind of calling do your second job. Mm-hmm. So this is like, we got to talking about Stardew, Animal Crossing, and then kind of similar games. So My Life at Portia, to some extent, No Man's Sky and The Sims, basically games where the gameplay is you're doing a job, like you're doing someone else's job after your work day is done.
Yeah. Like you come home, it's time to kick off your shoes, relax at home. And what do? You fire up a person doing a job.
Totally. Sometimes a very, very grindy job. So one of the things that like we were talking about before we started recording is that there's kind of this like big umbrella of like life sim games or social sim games. And you know, you can fit a ton of different things into that. But I think this, the games we're talking about here are more the, so I saw Animal Crossing referred to by a writer online as tend and befriend, which I think is a great way of describing Animal Crossing because you're tending to flowers and fruit trees and kind of the general physical plant of your island, and you're befriending villagers. And I feel like Stardew, I think, is more often described as a farming sim, but I feel like tend and befriend kind of works for it.
Oh yeah. You tend your farm and then you befriend all the people around you. And like, I mean, there's slightly more active things like fishing and like mining and fighting in caves, but I mean, yeah, it's tend and befriend is very accurate. I think Stardew calls itself an open-ended country life RPG, which
I love it.
That's a very optimistic view of country life.
Totally. Actually, I wanted to ask you because I've never played Stardew. I've watched my partner play it a lot. In what way is it an RPG?
So as you do things, you gain experience in them, and then that levels you up. So you choose like at each track of stats, I think there's five, there's 10 levels, and at level 5 and level 10 you choose a specialization. So
okay,
I mean, the thing is like there's usually just like good choices and bad choices. Like some of them are not great and some of them are like this is useless in the end game, you know? So like it's not real strong on RPG elements. And like I said, you can also go into like caverns and mines and like fight things. Like that's one of the tracks of activities in the game is like killing monsters. So that is like a truly like classic RPG element too.
Gotcha. Okay.
More so than just like sitting and tending to my rhubarb, which I spent all spring doing.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, My Life at Portia, which is now dead to me, due to like game breaking bugs that caused me to lose like dozens of hours of gameplay. It's similar in that you play a crafter, you build things, you're a builder, but you also, you do these basically like dungeon crawls and you kill a big bad. And so, and you also have like a skill tree. So, although I don't think of it as a role-playing game in the way that like the word RPG is like thrown around, mm-hmm. but I guess technically it is. What are your thoughts on, I want to talk about like what makes these games, the games of this genre, work really well. And also what makes these games like not work very well.
So I think the most important thing is that your game be able to procedurally generate 18 quintillion planets.
Yeah. I was like reading about No Man's Sky cause I'd never played it. And my mind was totally blown that, by the description, a procedurally generated deterministic open world universe, which includes over 18 quintillion planets.
Yeah, you can simulate it, but you can't make it fun.
Totally. I didn't understand what deterministic meant, and I had to look it up. Do you understand this, Shane?
No, what does that mean?
I don't know if it's actually worth going into, but, and I'm also probably not going to just describe it well, but basically, like, what I think it means is that nothing really exists in the game until a player makes a choice to, like, generate something.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And so it's, there's a complicated mathematical equation, that has to do with, the way things are procedurally generated.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can actually see that, especially on console, because the draw distance isn't as good as it is on PC. So I played it when it was launched, which is a few years ago. And I know there's been a ton of content updates since then that I haven't really explored. But when it launched, like on PS4, like the draw distance wasn't great. So you could easily tell that like the mountain that was like just suddenly appeared in front of you was not there 5 seconds before you walked up to it. You know, like you could clearly see that that was happening because like otherwise, like there's a shadow that should have been looming over you that wasn't. You
I know? See.
So that makes sense. Like I get that. And that's an efficiency and processing thing. And like the way that it like stores its variables, I guess, once they're created so that they stay true to itself.
Yeah.
It's different. So what's interesting about No Man's Sky is that it's different from the others in that you don't really build, mm-hmm. right? Like Stardew, Animal Crossing, My Life at Portia, like The Sims, right? All these games are about building up what you have. Mm-hmm. Whereas like No Man's Sky is a game that is fundamentally about exploration, which means anything you build, you are ultimately going to leave behind and probably not return to.
Okay.
I understand that that's a little different now. And like there's been a lot of work done by players to put like governmental structures in place to like help maintain that stuff. But like I think its basic gameplay is like go to a planet, exploit some resources, leave, you know, like go to another planet, explore around, exploit some resources, leave, build the thing that you need to get what you want and then take that with you. You know, it's not really about building a base and like making this planet Planet Shane or making that planet Planet Sally. It's about like find the cool thing, see the weird fauna, fight the weird thing, move on with your life, find some new bits of language or whatever, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, it sounds like it has, like the gameplay feels, is it like that it's grindy enough that it feels essentially like a do your second job game?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not difficult and like, it's not challenging in the way that like feels bad, you know, like it's relaxing in its gameplay, which I think is also an important element of this.
Yeah.
I think that's like almost the key element of this is that like they tend to be very low stress, even if they have action elements, you know, like No Man's Sky and Stardew does. And I don't know, My Life at Portia does, right?
Yeah, totally. I think actually for me, as I was thinking about this, that to me is like the main thing that makes these games work for me and make me want to play them. The grind to gameplay ratio, which is not to say that grinding isn't part of the gameplay, but it's a very specific part of the loop. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, in my time at Portia, I felt like the grinding felt sort of relentless, because you had to work so hard to get resources that felt so incredibly scarce that you just wanted to spend as much time as you could grinding. And the thing that I really like about Animal Crossing is that I would never call it grinding, even though you know, you're like, I'm going to spend the day fishing to get some fish. I'm going to spend the day hitting trees to get wood. I guess it's that when you want to do things and if whether you want to build things or, you know, buy things, nothing feels prohibitively resource intensive or expensive. I felt like in my time at Portia, the economy was really weird where if you wanted to like buy a potted plant, you would have to have like a huge amount of the in-game currency that like an amount that didn't make sense in the economy of the game just for the purposes of like making it harder to achieve the moment where you can buy that potted plant.
Got it.
Whereas in Animal Crossing, things don't feel to me like they're either so expensive to buy that you have to grind for a zillion hours to afford them, or they require so many different components that you have to grind for a zillion hours to get those components, but they also aren't just like freely available. There's like some amount of challenge and some amount of planning and some amount of grinding that you have to do to get the things that you want, but not so much that's prohibitive and not so little that it feels like you're not putting any effort into it. And that sweet spot for me is like a huge plus and like kind of like the thing that I think these games need to actually be fun to play.
Yeah, I think you hit I think what makes those games work when they work and fail when they don't is like there's this pacing to it where you have to get a sense that like the things you're doing can be optimized in small ways, right? Mm-hmm. Like I can do my fishing better tomorrow than I did today.
Mm-hmm.
But also like you need to have like enough of an overarching goal that like I know I'm not going to fish for the rest of my gameplay forever, mm-hmm. right? But like I'm going to get the thing that I need that then lets me like once I get this kind of fish, like now it makes it easier for me to get this kind of plant, right?
Totally.
Like and that like all those systems kind of work together where they keep passing you around like explore these caves, cool, do this fishing, cool, like plant these plants, cool, right? Like meet this friend, great. And like as you just kind of keep getting passed around these activities in a very natural way, mm-hmm. you get variety without ever feel like you're being told what to do or feeling like I can't do the thing that I enjoy most in this game, which is, you know, planting and harvesting or fishing or fighting or whatever, right? Like there's like that balance of like let me micro optimize the thing I'm doing, but like give me enough variety that I'm not only doing that forever.
Totally. Yeah, I think that is a huge thing. And I think that also is aided, at least in Animal Crossing, and you can tell me if this is the case in Stardew Valley, that is aided by having ways that you can progress through the game and with where there are things that are gated until you do them, but they're not, you don't have to ever hit those milestones if you don't want to get through those gates.
Right.
Like, you know, you can, there's a whole thing in Animal Crossing where you're encouraged to basically build up your island in order to get a higher rating. So it's like a rating of 1 to 5 stars. And when you get to, I think 5 stars, this like famous musician in the world of Animal Crossing comes to play at your island. And I believe that once he comes, that is when you unlock terraforming, which is the ability that lets you really like radically remodel your island. Mm-hmm. And you can, because there's no end game, it's not like you get to 5 stars, KK comes to your island, you terraform, you get to the end of the game, you win. It's just like another way to evolve what you can do in the game. Because there's no finishing, you don't ever have to do that. You don't have to worry about your stars. If you don't want to do the things that the game wants you to do in order to get a higher rating, you don't have to. It won't unlock the next thing, but it also won't impede your gameplay.
Right. Right. Yeah. If you enjoy doing the thing that isn't terraforming, then you could just keep doing that thing forever and not worry about it. Right.
Exactly. Exactly. I think there are people out there who are like, let me terraform without having to build up my island. But then you're sort of getting into the territory of like, can every game do every single thing for every single person?
Right.
And it's rough.
Yeah. I mean, so Stardew has a similar thing with the, like first the greenhouse and then so unlocking the greenhouse and then unlocking the Junimo huts. So the greenhouse gives you a place where you can plant seeds from any season forever,
mm-hmm.
Which lets you basically like is the place that you can plant the end game seeds that give you financial independence, right? So you're no longer tied to money for the seasons. Like from there, like you get your ancient fruit, you get your ancient fruit wine, you are pretty much, you know, like within 6 weeks, like money doesn't matter to you anymore, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can now do whatever you want. And then the other piece is the Junimo huts, which give you basically like automated farm workers, like they're little forest spirits that will go out mm-hmm. and collect your crops for you. Once you have those two things unlocked, the farming piece is really like you just plant the seeds that you want to plant at the beginning of the spring or at the beginning of the season and you're done,
mm-hmm.
right? Like you've already got sprinklers and now you've got things to harvest it. So the money just comes in. You don't have to farm anymore. And then it's just about getting all the resources you need to build your farm in whatever aesthetic fashion you want, right? Because that's kind of the end game.
Okay.
And like once you hit that point, like the quests stop coming in because, you know, you've probably finished all of them or you have the resources to tackle them pretty directly. And like it really is just like, what do I do today? Well, what do I feel like doing? I guess I want to go catch one of every fish. You know, I guess I could work on these unlocks and achievements. You know, it's like, so it does kind of, for me, it kind of dies a little bit around that point where like, I don't have that goal to chase after that's like going to keep me on the drip. Like I don't get a little achievement for unlocking 25 fish, you know, like I have to get all 55 to get the achievement and like, you got to give me something in between, you know, like
totally. Yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean. I think like part of the, I think part of why Animal Crossing, although people play Stardew Valley for hundreds and hundreds of hours, but with Animal Crossing, there are a lot of different things to max out. And there's also the social interactions with villagers that people are really into. Mm-hmm. So you can have a certain, I think you can have a maximum of 9 villagers on your island at once. And people really are attached to certain villagers and go out of their way to get them. I just learned that one of the villagers I have is like highly, highly, highly valued. And if he ever leaves, I can like sell him on like the Animal Crossing gray market, which I can't wait to talk about in a little while.
Okay.
I think of Animal Crossing as an HGTV sim because you're doing so much landscaping and designing and decorating. There are so many items to get, so many things to be able to do that it feels endless. But I think there's probably a point at which like Stardew Valley also felt endless, like when it was, when it first came out. And I think like, it, you know, if you play something for hundreds and hundreds of hours, even if you can technically keep doing stuff, eventually you run out of wanting to be on the drip.
Yeah.
And I think one thing that helps with that is when the creator, the developers keep supporting the game and introducing new things. Like didn't Stardew get, didn't they get like dinosaurs or something you were saying?
Yeah, yeah. So the last Stardew update came last December, which is years after it was released, right? But they added dinosaurs to the game. So there's like a new animal that I am now ranching on my land.
That's amazing. Yeah. And I think that like, I think that the stream of content is really helpful, whether it's like the like new updates or every month. And I think every month in Animal Crossing, there's like a new event for players to take part in. I think that also kind of keeps you on the drip. It'll be interesting to see how long I stick with this and how long it keeps being entertaining, but it shows no signs of slowing down for me. And I just want to mention like one other thing that I think is interesting about it. And I want to know if this is the case for Stardew as well. There's a lot of randomness in Animal Crossing, and there's a lot of hidden systems that are not random. And I think that people who have played Animal Crossing for like years can tell the difference between what's random and what has a hidden system, but I can't really. So for example, like I was telling you about friendship levels. So like how you can progress in friendship with different villagers. That's not random, but it is a hidden system. But if you're not paying close attention, it can certainly feel random, I think. There's also like, so something that feels random until you start paying attention is that there are certain times and seasons and places where you can catch certain fish and certain bugs.
Yeah.
And those actually have like a logic. They're like seasonal and they have to do with the weather. And then there's also like turnip prices, which I feel like are random, but I don't know. Like I know there are people who have like come up with algorithms to tell you when to like sell your turnips.
The turnip market.
The stock market. But like the thing about it that I, that like one of the like things that feels really delightful to me about it and that makes it always fun is that that element of discovery is like something is going to fall out of a tree and it's totally random. Who knows if it's going to be like a cool thing or a thing you don't really care about. But it's not only random. It's not just like total, you know, procedurally generated randomized chaos. There's also all of these really interesting systems that are sort of like holding the world together. And I think that combination makes the world feel really rich and also like it's full of surprises.
Yeah. And I think, so there's similar systems in Stardew. I think there's actually similar systems in No Man's Sky. even, but like this is where like Wikipedia becomes like the king, right? Mm-hmm. Of like, you know, as these things get figured out and documented, or, you know, Reddit and things like that, like people start working through what is the best time to sell my turnips? Like, mm-hmm. where do I find consistently in which season and which weather pattern this fish, mm-hmm. right? Like, how do I go get the legendary fish, right? How do I go get like this specific thing I'm looking for, right? And it like kind of starts to piece it all together for you. What's interesting about Stardew is how much of that information is contained within the game and just not made available to you up front. Mm. So like,
that's cool.
Like the social side of it, like, you know, it's tells you what your status of your relationship is, like how many hearts you have, right? Mm-hmm. Which is basically the only way you interact with people is by giving them gifts. Mm-hmm. So like you rarely make a choice that's material to a relationship. In fact, there might not be a single choice you make that's material, other than do you give them a gift? But mm-hmm. like, everybody has things they like and dislike, but it's only through like secret notes that you discover in the world that you actually get to learn all of that information, like written and spelled out.
Oh, that's cool.
As well as like, there are certain gifts that are universally liked, right? And universally loved, which are not called out, I think, in the game. Like that's a pure like experimentation thing, or mm-hmm. it's a pure Wikipedia exercise of, hey,
yeah.
who likes this jelly that I found? Or that I made, right? Like, I have pomegranate jelly. Who will like that? Well, it turns out everybody will like it, but nobody mm-hmm. loves it, right? Like, quickly look that up.
Totally.
Another person, a madman, might take 20 of those, go to every NPC and test them. I am not that madman.
No, I'm not either. I'm somewhere in between look everything up and the 20 jelly madman.
okay.
Because, like, I want to, some things I want to just find out for myself, like, there's the, all the villagers in Animal Crossing have different personalities, and there's one of the personalities they can have is Jock, which is really fucking exhausting because all they do is talk about working out. And I'm just like, I'm shut
that's
up.
That's your day job.
I know. That's like what I do all day. Leave me alone. And so I was like, I'm going to see if this dude goes bananas. If I give him like a barbell, I crafted a barbell in like a varsity jacket kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And he was like really psyched. And so, some of it, you know, you can sort of piece together. But then I have a villager who keeps giving me like women's clothes. And I'm like, the way I dress my little Animal Crossing avatar is the way I dress in real life, which is like very, like, it's like gender neutral or like, I wear or like androgynous or something. Mm-hmm. And so my little dude is wearing like a baseball cap, a button down shorts and like basically like chucks. And this one villager keeps giving me like tiaras and like maxi dresses and shit. I'm like, dude, why are you trying to like silence my gender presentation right now? So anyway, I don't know. Yeah. The whole thing also of like interacting with the meta knowledge of the game is really interesting. And, you know, now that I know that I have this, this one villager who's really valuable, like, I think I'm definitely going to try to get some like goodies out of it.
I like how all it took was finding out that you had a rare and now like
100%,
like now I can't get this game. Look, it's a valuable game. If I don't play it, I'm wasting money.
I'm losing money by not playing this game. Yeah, totally. I just want to, so do you want to talk about what makes these games particularly addictive? Like we were talking about whether or not like a game being like good, having good gameplay is the same thing as like making it like an addictive game, because these games to me feel like people play Animal Crossing and Stardew for like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours. Mm-hmm. And they go through phases of like not playing anything else. And that feels kind of unique to me.
I think part of it is the same loss aversion or whatever, like that same like dopamine hit of gambling that like loot boxes take advantage of. Mm-hmm. Right. Like as because we talked about this and I was like, oh, I don't really see what the difference is. And now I definitely like as I thought about it, like this was a criticism of Overwatch too, right? Like that the next level is only a couple games away at any given time. And that means the next loot box is only a couple games away at any given time. And that means that if I just play for another hour, I can get another loot box. And maybe that has the skin I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, I think it's that similar kind of thing where you're never too far from the next goal or the next random roll or the next open or the next unlock where you feel like maybe this is the one that's going to have that thing that I'm hoping for. And whatever that is in the game, right? Like in No Man's Sky, it is the next planet has the rare resource that I need, right? Or in, you know, in Stardew, it's like maybe this dungeon run or this caverns run is going to be the one that gets me to level 100, right? Like you just keep trying it. Or maybe today's the day I catch the fish, you know, like
totally.
And I think it's just enough. You have just enough of a chance that it's worth continuing to try it. And then it becomes habit, right? Like then it just becomes that. But I've noticed like when I hit the end game where that questing like element starts to fade away, is similar to like, I have a similar relationship to the game that I now have with Overwatch when I stopped opening loot boxes, like on my, I played for hundreds of hours on PlayStation, opened every loot box, collected every skin. Once I switched to PC, I decided I was never going to open another loot box. I have two accounts on PC. I've never opened a loot box. I'm immune.
Like you lost interest kind of?
I didn't like the behavior, right? Like I didn't like the feeling that I was, that addictive feeling of like, oh, I'll just play one more because then I'll get the unlock.
Totally.
Right? Like it was hard to walk away from when I was on the margin. So I decided like, I'm not like, when I'm done playing, I'm done playing. Yeah, like I don't have anything. I'm not working towards anything. There's no press your luck for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is actually a big part of what makes the gameplay interesting is like, there's enough RNG involved and you get enough tries at it that it's worth playing. You know, the cost of a day is 20 minutes. So if I spend 20 more minutes playing, I can get another roll and see how my day goes, you know?
Totally.
I think that's an element of it.
Yeah, I totally think that's an element. And I think it's like, I think for me, like, I'm realizing that I've gone through periods in Animal Crossing where I would get really into going to these mystery islands. You like pay, there's two different types of currency in the game and you can use one of them to travel to mystery islands. And when you go to a mystery island, there's a chance that you're going to get just kind of a standard, whatever island that has apples on it. You can catch some fish, but there's like a chance that you're going to get to this like island with like a ton of like money on it, which I've never gotten to, or you're going to get to an island that has, a ton of fruit that's more valuable to you. You're going to go to an island where some kind of rare fish is more plentiful or whatever, or that it'll be like when you get there, the weather pattern or the design of the island will be such that there are fish available to you that there aren't on your island. And I had a couple of days where I was really into like going, it felt actually really grindy. I was like going and seeing what I could get. And I was like, just one more. And I had that feeling of like, oh, I hate this actually. Like, I don't like this feeling. It's really fun to go to mystery islands so you can be like delighted by like what you find and the experience you have. But it sucks to be like, to have the feeling of like, just one more, especially because if you get there and the island is kind of blah, you're like, oh man, I used my ticket for this and whatever.
Yeah.
And so I think that like, I think that is for sure part of it.
I mean, that's gambling, right? Like,
and that's gambling.
That is literally gambling. Yeah.
100%. And then I think the other thing that makes these games for me feel like I can't put them down or I don't ever want to put them down is that there is something really familiar about having just a routine. And because Animal Crossing, you play it, if it's 8 o'clock a.m. in where you live in real life, it's 8 o'clock a.m. in Animal Crossing. And there's like a day-night cycle that's like tied to your actual day.
So you actually play in literal real time?
You play in real time. And
I thank you for, I've now never playing this game.
And like, it's like stores open at a certain time and close at a certain time. There's something that feels really familiar about it. And I think that is kind of a draw. It's like this weird thing of like, it's the true, like do your second job thing. And then I think the other big thing for me is that it's really nice to play a game that doesn't have like a fail condition. I remember playing SimCity, I think like the very first one in like 1990. And it was so profoundly difficult because it would be like, you don't have enough of a population, so you would add things so you'd have more people, and then you would have like a ton of pollution. So then you would like build, then you would like, instead of having like the coal plant, you would do like the nuclear plant. So there's less pollution, but then there'd be like a nuclear disaster.
Yeah.
Or you would run out of money. So you would raise taxes and then everyone would riot. And it just, it felt like so prohibitively difficult to like balance. Also I was 11. So that maybe for an adult, it would have been a, like an easier game, but I found it so punishing that it just wasn't fun at all. And there's something about playing a game where, like a simulation game, where there's no fail state. Even like, even in The Sims, I've played The Sims like for a total of like 35 minutes in my whole life, but like they would get so upset and like have to go to the bathroom really bad or be really hungry or be really tired. And I felt like, it was very frustrating to try to meet all of their needs and also not neglect something else. And I just found it very, very stressful. And for me, Animal Crossing, there might be people out there who experience some element of it as really stressful. For me, there's just no part of it that feels stressful, which is just makes it feel so addictive.
Yeah, I think that's right. Cause I mean, there's a fail state, right? Like you can lose, like you can get knocked out. You can, quote unquote, die in No Man's Sky, or you can die in Stardew, but like you wake up the next morning and it's fine.
Totally.
Right. Like, it, you know, the cost is incrementally set back, you know, to the point where it does feel freeing, where you can take risks, where it's not a problem. So I'm with you. I think that lack of fail state is like a safety net that lets you experiment, that doesn't feel like if I do this wrong, I get punished for it. I think that's like super important.
Totally.
And maybe actually what separates like The Sims or just the entire Sims series really from this kind of second job narrative kind of story where, you know, ultimately there's an end game. There's a need to save scum sometimes because you need to prepare for problems that the world throws at you, that, you know, the world doesn't randomly create problems for you. You only have problems engaging with the things that you ended up choosing to engage with in a lot of these like social simulation games.
Yeah, that's actually a really good distinction. Cool. Okay. I mean, is there anything else you want to say before we move on here about these games?
Well, we had a little fun question.
Oh, that's right. We did have a fun question. So I was thinking, how fun would it be to like have a tend and befriend game, but like set in a franchise or setting of some other like beloved property. So my question is, what game, franchise, or setting would you like to play as though it were a tend and befriend game like Stardew or Animal Crossing?
So I've gone through a couple permutations here. I started with Assassin's Creed 3 because I liked the homestead element of Assassin's Creed 3. And then you could go and take like pirate voyages. And then I realized, I think that's actually Assassin's Creed 4 just has build your pirate colony and be a pirate. So maybe that's a bad example. Maybe that's just my ideal game. I haven't played it. And then I was thinking, like, what about The Last of Us, except like you're actually building one of the many places that you go to as Joel and Ellie, right? And like trying to build those communities. And then I realized, oh, no, it's easier than that. That's Fallout.
Right.
I have landed on Fallout, and I just picked my favorite location of all the Fallout games, New Vegas. So I would
like to
tend and befriend in Fallout New Vegas, build my casino empire from the Golden Sands.
I love that. That's awesome. So I chose two different kind of like AAA properties. One would be the Old West of Red Dead Redemption 2. And it's like I run a general store. I'm a merchant.
That's a very homestead kind of thing, right?
Totally.
Like that's a very like Assassin's Creed 3 vibe, because I've stripped out all the assassin stuff and you're stripping out all the like posse stuff.
Yeah, totally. Take out all of the like all the fighting. I want to make friends with like, I want to form like a business improvement district with like the other merchants on like the main street of my small town, which is just like a bar, a hotel, and like a gunsmith or whatever.
So are you Seth Bullock in this case?
Yeah, I'm essentially Seth Bullock. Yes.
Okay. All right.
With a really erect carriage and bushy mustache. The other one I would say would be really cool is, so in Watch Dogs 2, you're a hacker, you're part of a hacker collective in present day San Francisco. And I think like Attend and Befriend, where you run, like, I believe that like what functions as your base in Watch Dogs 2 is like the basement of, I think it's like a gaming store slash like comic, people are like playing role playing games and like, it, anyway, so I would like my business to be running basically like
a
friendly local gaming store where people are like playing D&D in the back and I'm like selling things and I'm like befriending the like local, I don't even know, like DMs or whatever. I think that would be a really dope and like, and also like, like allowing the local hacker collective to like hang out in the basement.
Okay.
So that's my tend and befriend. I don't, and now I'm thinking that maybe these are just things I want to do in real life.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Same
cool.
For me. I want to build my post-apocalyptic casino.
Right. I mean, you've said that so many times.
Right.
So we like to end each episode by talking about something that we are really into right now, that may or may not be video game related. Shane, you want to start?
I can kick us off. So I am really into Stars right now. That's Stars with a Z, the mm-hmm. premium television station. So hear me out, Sally.
Okay, I'm listening.
For a 1 month subscription through like Amazon Prime or whatever is like, I don't know, like $6 or $8, right? For that 1 month, you will have access to all of Black Sails, like the entire series, which is a great pirate series, like, you know, premium prestige action television, set as like the follow-up to Treasure Island, right? So it's okay. About Long John Silver, like after Treasure Island, right? And sort of muddled in with like real historical pirate fiction of like Port Royal and all that stuff, right? So that's cool. And then also as a bonus, you get the G.I. Joe movie, the animated film from 1987, one of the best 80s action movies that got made in an era known for great action movies.
True.
Animated, adorable, jingoistic, like lasers, red lasers versus blue lasers. What more could you want? It's a very hard movie to find. I was very thankful to find it there when I got the whim or the urge to watch it when you sent me pictures of you playing with G.I. Joes as a kid.
Yeah. One of my favorite things about just randomly mentioning a topic to you is that there's like an 85% chance that you will have encyclopedic knowledge of the topic.
That's not true at all.
It's a fact. Or maybe I just keep mentioning things that you happen to be really into, such as G.I. Joe. So I sent you this picture, not realizing that you would actually, you could do like a TED talk on the G.I. Joe franchise, I would say.
That's not true.
Okay, it's true. But moving on, I look forward to watching. I've never heard of Black Sails, but now I'm interested. And the G.I. Joe movie, I would like to commit to watching that sometime in the next couple of months. It's going to take a little convincing, I think, of my partner.
So it is like, I mean, honestly, like it's not a war movie, right? Like it's G.I. Joe, right? So it's like kid friendly action, but like, it is like a bonkers, like sci-fi conspiracy theory, like global warming destruction of the earth kind of plot.
Oh, shit. Okay.
it does not pull punches. Like, so the story of this movie, right, is like Hasbro released the Transformers movies to theaters, in which they killed Optimus Prime, and it was a disaster because like the kids who liked Transformers were like six, right? G.I.
Oh,
Joe
shit.
Had like an older audience. It was, you know, that was like the preteen kind of brand for Hasbro. It had comic books, like it had the, you know, obviously the toy line and stuff. So like they had the concept of death in G.I. Joe already, but they were rebooting the toy line and they killed a character in the movie, right? Like a main character, one of the leaders of the G.I. Joes dies.
Shit.
And then they had to go back and redub the whole thing to like Duke, instead of dying, goes into a coma, right? And
wow.
Like at the end, there's like this very strange voiceover of like, oh, Duke's gonna be a-okay. Like, and then those gutless executives didn't even release it to theaters because the Transformers movie flopped. So like this movie got buried on direct to VHS. And like it totally, but it is, it's like the Sunbow, like it, Sunbow was the producer. So that it's the one that did the TV show back in the day.
Okay.
I can't remember the name of the animation house, but it's like a very good Japanese animation house doing it. Like it is, it's legit. Like if I'm going to make a pitch for a cartoon movie, like in that era, it's that.
Okay. All right. So. I now understand that it's not just a weird campy movie. It's actually like a good weird campy movie.
A good weird campy movie. Okay. Burgess Meredith is the villain.
Oh, that's right. That
Don
is...
Johnson is the hero, the wayward hero.
So wild. The 80s were such a wild time for like certain genres. But anyway, I guess that's a topic for another podcast.
Anyway, not even, stars. That was my recommendation. Stars, okay. For a month.
So I'm definitely going to do that. Okay. So the thing I'm really excited about right now is, so Shane, there is something called Nookazon. There's a character named Tom Nook in Animal
Who
Crossing.
I hear is the villain.
Right. I mean, listen, he gets painted as a villain, but dude gives you no interest loans that you can pay back anytime you want. So,
but he seems very disappointed when you do that.
Yeah, he does. I mean,
he got his hooks into you. He owned you, and now he doesn't.
It's true. He totally owns you, and he also is like, he's like, I need someone to build on the island. Can you help me with that? And you say yes, and he's like, great, that'll be 10,000 bells. And you're like, wait, but you asked me for help. Why am I paying? But anyway, whatever. That's neither here nor there. So there's something called Nookazon, which is an Amazon basically for all of the items that you can get in Animal Crossing. And it's a site that this dude started, and you can buy and sell and trade items. That in and of itself is like cool and fun. The thing that is bananas and blowing my mind is the Discord for Nookazon. It is the most lit place on the internet. I don't think that that's an exaggeration. It's like, there's a million channels divided by different objects people are listing or people are looking for. And I mean, you might have more experience with like big popular Discords, because I think you're more Discord channels than I am. But it's like at any time of day or night, it is just new message, like you're just... I'm like making this motion to Shane of like my hand starting low and like going high, because it's just like a constant stream of people posting things that they have to sell or trade or things that they're looking for. And it's like I'll be looking and I'll look away for 30 seconds. I look back and there's like 10 new messages. It's amazing. It's busy. It is the most like hopping economy. And it's also like people are just like wheeling and dealing. They're inviting people to their islands. They're like, come over, like you don't have, you know, free entry, but if you could water my flowers, that would be great. Like, because there are so many different
it's
events.
Not free.
I know it's not free. Anyway, it's incredible. And like I went there to see if I could like get my hands on some stuff. And it's actually just so overwhelming and fast paced. It reminds me of, oh wait, you haven't seen Trading Places though, right?
I've not seen Trading Places.
Okay. There's a scene at the very end on the trading floor, and it's just chaos. It's just like hundreds of people shouting at each other and like pointing, and it's absolute utter chaos. That is exactly what the Nookazon Discord feels like to me. It's shocking to me that any transactions get made, but I did actually succeed in like doing some trades.
Congrats.
It was amazing. But like, honestly, like most of the time I'm looking at it, I'm not even like trying to make any moves to do anything. I'm just like watching what people are posting, because it's just like incredible. It's just like an incredible thing to witness.
It's like you're effectively watching the stock ticker.
100%. That is exactly what it is. It's like my grandpa used to just like have on whatever the channel is that has that at the bottom.
Yeah, like CNBC or something.
CNBC. And he would just watch the ticker for like hours and hours and hours. And that's what I'm doing on the Nookazon Discord. And now that I found out that I have a villager who's very valuable, I'm going to figure out how I can sell him to someone.
Okay.
So yeah, just some light like villager gray market trading.
I like how Animal Crossing finance is going to inspire you to learn how to code so that you can run scripts in the Nookazon Discord in order to pull out pricing information in real time so that you can manage the price of your most valuable asset.
That is so smart. Like, you're right. That will happen.
And now you're doing somebody else's day job.
Exactly.
After your day job to improve your leisure time day job.
Right,
and
exactly.
That's gaming in 2020.
It's three jobs just for starters. Yeah, it's totally true. Yeah, I will report back on how this all works out. I haven't really played the turn up the stock market. It feels like a level of stress. Again, I think that is like one of the gambly things that people like. I feel like it just stresses me out, but there is a lot of money to be made in the stock market. So maybe I will.
I think you mean bells.
Bells, sorry. There's a lot of bells to be made. Thank you. So I think that does it. That is it for this episode. Please rate us and review us on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts.
You can also follow us on Twitter at Co-op Mood Pod, all one word, or follow me, Shane, at Mundangerous. That's M-U-N dangerous.
And you can follow me at Sally T. And you can also email us at coopmoodpod@gmail.com.
And you can find us and other great gaming podcasts on the OneShot Network at oneshotpodcast.com.
Co-op Mood is produced by Shane and Sally. Edited by Lucas. Our music is Pixel Squirrel by Espresso Music. Logo design by Emily Cardamus.